The AFL is full of talking heads.
It was insipid performance.
It's not the first time you've turned on a commentator.
They threaten clubs all the time.
But now two men ask the question,
why so serious? Serious.
Been spending most of our lives listening to Titus and Paradise.
Oh, yes, and wherever you are, however you're listening on whatever device, maybe a Sony Walkman. Welcome to the Titus and Paradise podcast. We're here for the Greenfield Post, as always. And now we've got that horror of the Hawthorn three-peat out of the way. There's plenty of other things to get our teeth into. My name's Sergio Paradise, and I'm joined, as always, by the one-man compensation pick, Titus O'Reilly.
Oh, thank you, Serge. And I've got to say, I was feeling pretty flat with the AFL finished,
yeah,
as I always do each year. Yeah. It forces me to actually interact with people.
A bit of human interaction.
It's awful. But what's going to fill my off-season is watching Campbell Brown on Channel 9's The Verdict.
Oh, yes.
Did you see a bit of that?
Oh, I did see a bit of it. I got to say, I struggled to get through the entire hour, and I don't think I'm the only
Australian. So did the panelists.
To say that, most of the panelists struggled to get through, but there were a couple of notable figures who sort of grabbed your attention.
Well,
up.
I mean, Mark Latham's sort of a parody of himself these days.
He is.
Like an actor playing a version you thought Mark Latham was like. But I did watch the promo, and the reason I had to watch it is it said they've pulled together some of Australia's greatest minds.
Yes.
And then they said AFL footballer Campbell Brown. And yes. I thought, isn't it about time that Campbell Brown was given a platform to share his insights into Australian society?
Oh, absolutely. A man, as you say, share his insights into Australian life and politics. This from a man who once punched an ATM because he'd forgotten his own PIN number.
And what I love too is he wasn't actually out of his depth in amongst that company.
He was probably.
It wasn't like
he was not out of his depth by any stretch. I mean, well, yeah, Jackie Lambie. As you say, Mark Latham.
Yeah,
you
know. There were so many panelists. There was quite a few. I just didn't know who they were.
No.
They didn't really introduce them, and they just started talking, and everything was a bit of a sort of a feel opinion. It was I feel this, but it wasn't actually any. There was no facts or any solutions. It was like Campbell said at one point about terrorism. He said, "When I was mucking around as a kid, we just had big house parties. We didn't shoot people." I thought, thanks for that, Brownie. Thanks for sharing. That doesn't really help us with the people that do. But it got me thinking, I would love we have so many footy talk shows and footy panel shows. I would love to have a footy panel of former or current players.
Yes.
And they can't talk about football or sport. They can only talk about politics and social issues.
I tell you what. You're heading in a very good direction here. Just on TV, I was watching Fox Footy the other day, even though the season's over. That's how pathetic I am. And I saw a promo, and I kid you not, for a program called The Best of Bounce.
I saw that too.
Yeah, there's a contradiction in terms if ever I've heard it.
And it seemed to go for some length of time, so I don't know what that was.
Oh, I can just imagine the production meeting and some poor guy's editing it together and he goes, "We really calling this the best of bounce? Shouldn't it be just the least annoying bits of bounce?"
Well, if they're going to have Campbell Brown, surely next they've got to get someone like Brendan Favola on to talk financial advice or something.
He could be the new Ross Greenwood. Of the football
world. Of The Verdict. So if you haven't seen it and you listen to this podcast, I think it's on Thursday nights.
It's
a train wreck TV, but it is. You don't even have to watch the whole thing. Watch 10 minutes. And
10
you'll
minutes
get
is
the,
more than enough.
Yeah, 10 minutes is really more than enough.
And I wish they'd done it live. I don't know if they're planning to do it live. You could see from a TV production point of view, it had been stop and start the entire thing. There'd been plenty of stop tapes. And poor old Carl Stefanovic, who handles live stuff, live TV pretty well, you've got to say, in the mornings. He obviously had somebody, a producer, yelling down his earpiece the whole time. He had what seemed like 17 garbled voices screaming over the top of each other. And then what I didn't get at the very end, all these big crosses and ticks on giant screens came up at the end like a game show.
Yeah.
It was just an absolute schmozzle. A complete train wreck. which in our parlance, Titus, is must-watch television.
Must-watch television. So moving on to our most favourite thing of the entire year, way better than the season, is free agency, and it's kicked off.
Trade week,
It's day two as we record this, early morning. Yeah. Not a lot has happened yet this morning, but yesterday, did you know, a lot of people haven't picked this up, Patrick Dangerfield has left Adelaide and gone to Geelong.
Didn't that just come right out of the blue?
I tell you what, if only people had photoshopped his head onto a Geelong jumper 200 times in the last 6 months, we would have maybe be ready.
And look, you know, the worst kept secret, I mean, it happens every season. You know, now it was Tom Scully, it was Gary Ablett years ago. This year it's Dangerfield. Now, what do you make of the deal that Adelaide got for him? Picks 9, 28, and Dean Gore.
Oh, well, getting Dean Gore is massive.
That's better than you'd pick 9.
I tried to look him up online, but I couldn't find him.
Well, I saw Tom Hawkins actually tweeted yesterday, "Only here for a short time, Gorey, but you left an indelible imprint," or words to that effect, on the playing group. I thought, really, Tom? And then Geelong came out, I think, yesterday and said, look, we asked Dean on Wednesday, you know, last week, would he consider going back to Adelaide? And he thought about it and went back and forth, and he did decide that he would. I thought, really? You asked him if you wanted to go back to Adelaide? Hey, Gorey, you're on the next flight. Yeah. We're getting danger. Yeah, you're out of here.
You want to stay here but be the guy that stopped us getting Dangerfield?
Yeah, I don't think so. Get in a plane.
It's a bit like when one of the Sydney Swans, I can't even remember who it was, which is terrible of me, who gave up his number to Buddy. He had That's Buddy's right. number, and they said, oh, he thought about it, and he thought I'd do it. And you thought, he was told.
Of course he was
The guy told. We're paying $10 million or $9 million to wants to.
He can wear number 100 if he wants to.
Whatever he wants. But it just shows you that the struggling teams, the down-and-out teams can still attract top talent.
Yeah, that is
free agency, just wonderful. And then on top of that, it's a good day for Geelong fans because they also got Scott Selwood.
Scott Selwood, you know.
It's the biggest employment boost in Geelong in years. There's two jobs created.
Two jobs created in Geelong. And on the upside, two fine young men in Dangerfield and Selwood get to leave Perth and Adelaide and move to a big city.
But what's with the wanting to play with your brother? Who would want to work with their brother?
Oh, no. And there's been so many Selwoods go through the system already. I mean, surely they would have beaten each other up enough when they were kids.
Maybe that's it. It's easier to be on the same side as each other.
True.
So the thing that is playing out even more in Trade Week, which is becoming a lot more fun, is Jake Carlisle.
This is becoming a soap opera. Now, the Dangerfield thing, we always knew it was going to happen, right? Jake Carlisle, it's starting to get messy, which I'm pretty excited about.
Well, he did start to announce to his opponents while playing that he hated the club. So that was great. And he probably said, I want to go to St Kilda to a few of them. I think that's how he actually did the announcement.
It was around 17 he was telling his opponents.
He was actually interviewing other teams' players. Why should I come to your club? But I don't know what is funnier between this, that St Kilda want Jake Carlisle or that Essendon think he's worth pick 5.
I mean, it's almost an ambit claim from Essendon, but they seem to be sticking to their guns. Now, it's always a theoretical thing, but Jake Carlisle, pick 5? Oh, it's overs for mine.
I had a lot of Essendon supporters. Yeah. I tweeted about I didn't think Carlisle was worth pick 5, and they really got stuck into me, and they're saying, oh, he's a key position player under 25, but he's played about 6 good games in the whole time I've seen him. This is a guy who told opponents he hated the club he was with, has had several games where Bomber got very annoyed with him and he was coaching, where he just basically stopped playing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of those guys that has all the potential but has never pulled that together. Now, maybe that's because he's been at Essendon and they've been...
Possibly.
They've been a little bit of trouble. People might not have known, but they had a bit of a supplement scandal.
Bit of a WADA problem. Still ongoing.
A slight WADA problem. They had a SADA and then it developed into late WADA. Stage WADA. So I don't know how he's worth pick 5. But,
no, I don't either.
But, I mean, I guess you don't ask, you don't get. So
exactly.
That's what they're going
to
do.
It's an amber claim, and good luck to him.
But it's funny all the trades happening and the way that it happens. I also like James Aish has said he wants to leave Brisbane.
Yes.
And, I mean, after all he's done for that club, they won't let him go.
They won't let him go.
He went up there a year ago. He complained for a year. Yeah. He barely played any sort of footy at all. And when he did play, he didn't tackle or do anything.
In most other workplaces, they'd be happy to see the back of you.
Well, and I think Brisbane are just like, you know what? You've not even paid lip service to pretending to play up here. So why are we going to do you any favours?
On your bike.
And, you know, I think clubs need to start doing that, because this is, otherwise it's just the players just go where they want, which is not how the system is meant to work. It's meant to be a balance between.
Yeah, of course it is.
They get some ability to go where they want, but it's limited to teams being able to develop players.
Exactly. Now, there's a new phrase that's crept into Trade Week over the last 2 years, and it's one I quite enjoy. And that phrase, of course, being steak knives. Now, Jack Crisp at Collingwood was fairly unhappy. I think he came third in the Collingwood Best and Fairest last week. And he actually said in his speech he was not at all happy that he was referred to as the steak knives in the deal. But if you're going to go down the steak knives path, if Essendon really want pick five for Jake Carlisle, they need to get Tim Shaw from Demtel in to do the presentation. the greatest salesman of all time. We're Melbourne supporters. We should just put Tim Shaw on our selection panel, and we would get Nat Fyfe and Dangerfield in a straight swap for Jimmy Tumpus. That's how good Tim Shaw is.
He really is.
He is. So the steak knives thing, maybe you don't like it, but it's a new part of football.
You know what? Maybe he's already working for us, because a huge coup for Melbourne.
Oh, this...
It overshadowed the Dangerfield news.
It has.
That's the fact they actually recruited Jake Melksham.
For pick 25.
huge trade. That
overs again.
It's thrown the race for the eight next year wide open.
Oh, yeah. Melbourne, the odds are just plummeting now for just a walk. Top four potential.
The saddest bit about it,
yes,
is it's actually not a bad move for Melbourne. And that's actually,
yeah,
speaks to how bad Melbourne are. He is actually an upgrade on a lot of the players they've had.
Correct. But is he any good, Jake Melksham?
He's an honest trier who gets the ball a fair bit, but he butches it you know.
Well, he'll walk straight into the Melbourne's
so in Melbourne, his skills will be seen as elite.
Elite. Now, speaking of Melbourne, Jeremy Howe.
Yeah.
Heading for North Melbourne.
North are going very big. Everyone's going to Collingwood, it seems.
Apparently Collingwood are going to have 70 on their list next year.
That's right. They've asked to waive the salary cap.
but Jeremy Howe, he wants $500,000 a year. And he's been, you notice he's, or to be fair to Howe, probably his manager's been doing all the talking, but his manager's been talking up what an elite runner he is.
Yeah, they keep talking about the midfield and on the wing.
Any danger he may have shown some of that elite running at Melbourne over the last 6 years?
What sums up, and I've watched every game Jeremy Howe has played, and he's an amazing mark. So there is no doubt about that. And he's a bit like the guy in basketball who can dunk, but that's about it.
Yes.
You know, he's amazing at dunking.
Yeah,
but
the tall kid. Yeah.
The tall kid. So this year, perfect example, there was a great moment where he took a huge grab and gets up, plays on quickly, and kicks it straight to an opponent.
The opposition.
And that is Jeremy Howe.
Exactly. He's a one-man highlight reel, and he takes a specky once a fortnight, but there's not a lot more to his game. So, good luck to him if he can get $500,000 a year for taking eight speckies a year.
He's a competent average player that you can plug into a role, but he's not going to get you anything. And if he took away the leaps...
Yeah, he's not going to take North Melbourne to a premiership, put it that way. Having said that, if he does stay at Melbourne, we'll be right back on the Howie bandwagon next year.
Yeah,
we'll be glad he didn't go.
We'll go back and edit this section of the podcast out. Now you were telling me you were watching in a fair bit of detail, the President's Cup.
I didn't see as much of it as I would have liked, but I do love the President's Cup. It's one of the few team games that golf has, because it's, you know, such an obvious individual sport. It was played in South Korea this year between the American team and the internationals. And when it started, the opening night last Thursday or Friday night, I got on Twitter and I sent a tweet to Kim Jong-un, the dictator of North Korea. Now, I can't be 100% sure that he read the tweet.
Well, you're the only person he actually follows on Twitter.
But if he did, the tweet I sent to him was, The fact that the Fanatics were in South Korea at the time following the President's Cup, I thought it was an opportune moment for Kim Jong-un just to shoot a couple of cruise missiles down over the border to take out the Fanatics.
They're easy to identify too in the silly hats and the... they make a lot of noise.
They do. The downside to that, if he had taken my advice, that he quite possibly would have taken out Jason Day and Adam Scott at the same time. But the upside, of course, Bubba Watson and Phil Mickelson. But and there would not be one player on the PGA Tour who would be happy to see those two go.
That's the thing about war. It's trade-offs.
It is. It's trade-offs. It's like trade week. Now, speaking of Bubba Watson, this is an absolutely true story. Last year on the PGA Tour, at the end of the season, they give out a bunch of questionnaires to all the pros. And they have to fill them in. And most of the questions are deadly serious about how the tour is run and prize money, et cetera, et cetera. There are a couple of curly ones in at the end. One of them was, and this is true, they asked all the pros, amongst your peers on the PGA Tour, which player would you be least likely to assist if they were on fire? And they voted unanimously Bubba Watson ahead of Robert Allenby. I couldn't even get over that.
Gee, Robert Allenby can't even win that these days.
He can't get kidnapped properly. You know, he can't even be upsetting his pros properly.
Well, speaking of individual sports,
yes.
Last night there was an absolute cracker game played in the tennis. It was at the Shanghai Open.
Can't say I got that one. Yeah.
And Nick Kyrgios was playing, Australia's own. Nick Kyrgios. I love Nick.
Yep.
And Nick had a game where he won 6-3, 6-2. It was the first round, but it was apparently such a shambles, the tournament and the way it was run, to the point where, one, he got done for a swearing violation. But
In China.
But preceding that, he'd spent the whole game walking around going, this is a debacle, this is a mess, this is terrible. And the reason it was he saying that is, one, a cameraman spoke all throughout the game on the sidelines to the other cameraman, to the point where the umpire gave the cameraman three or four warnings before ejecting the cameraman for talking. But then on top of it, the ball boys and girls had not been trained properly. They didn't know where to stand.
Right.
They regularly tried to hand balls to players when they didn't need them.
To the receiving player.
Kyrgios would be changing hands.
I'm glad you told
ball,
me.
And a ball boy would just walk up with a ball and try and hand it to him. And then they wouldn't get the balls up to the serving end, so often the server was just standing there, just waiting for, and they were all running around in the wrong spots.
Oh, this is magnificent.
And then in the middle of halfway through the game, this is my favourite bit. So you could just imagine this scene in Shanghai, and you can imagine of all the players you'd want this happening around.
Oh, Nick Kyrgios, number one.
But then who walks into the stand in the second set to watch the rest of the game? Bernard Tomic.
Oh,
so
hello.
Bernard Tomic comes and sits down in front of Nick's parents or coach and, the player's box. Yeah. And Nick Kyrgios breaks off the game to go over and talk to him and says, oh, you wouldn't believe it, mate. The ball kids don't know what they're doing. This cameraman's been talking all through my match, and the surface terrible. He starts ripping right in the middle of the match.
Oh, I'm glad you told me about this. It's still going, this tournament?
It's still going. That was the first round, and he's through. But I just love the idea of those ball kids.
Get on board the Shanghai Open for tennis debacle as it should be played.
Now, you actually got some listener feedback this week.
I did. And just while we're on that, feel free to, if you're listening to this, to follow us on Twitter. Just look up Titus O'Reilly or Sergio Paradise. We'll be happy to follow you back. But
Serge will.
Yeah, I will. Titus is too big. I'm desperate for followers. He's got millions of them. A listener tweeted me suggesting that now the footy season over, we might look at a bit of A-League stuff. Now, I know you like your football, your soccer.
I actually really like football.
Yeah.
Despite the fact I think it's illegal under the, if you're an AFL, write about the AFL to actually not hate it.
To acknowledge that it exists.
Yeah.
It is actually a fairly good game in its own right.
They act like, people act like football in this country is the sleeping giant that is seconds away from
taking over
every other sport.
Everything.
they can't even keep their clubs afloat.
True.
They keep going broke. You know, the A-League's been a big improvement on the NSL and the old days, but it's not like this is... They keep making out that every second the AFL's going to go under.
Going to go under.
And the A-League is going to suddenly take over everything. It's nowhere near that.
It gets the kick in the arm by the Socceroos every couple of years. I mean, winning the Asian Cup and then qualifying for the World Cup. These things, which are far removed from the A-League or grassroots soccer, every couple of years they go, oh, soccer is going to take over, but it's purely because the Socceroos have won a handful of matches.
Yeah, it's like people are caring about the Wallabies all of a sudden in Victoria.
Exactly. I don't even understand the rules of rugby.
But the thing, the A-League is so good because what else would we be doing in summer? We got cricket, which is great. I appreciate that. But
you're going off that too.
It's the A-League too. Otherwise, what would I be doing if I didn't have the A-League and cricket to watch? I'd be going to the beach with friends, catching up with family. I mean, I just have to
Looking after your kids.
Yeah, just awful stuff. Stuff
that you don't want to do.
Who wants to do that ever?
You can watch the NBL. NBL's coming along.
See, the NBL has shocked me this week.
Yeah.
They've done several good things in a row for the first time since 1994.
Without being punctuated by 8 mistakes like they normally do.
They decided not to shoot themselves in the foot every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's taken me back to the days of, you know, when they used to play, I like to move it while you're at the NBL, or a bit of Montel Jordan, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
Those were the days. But they're on Fox Sports now.
They are.
5-year broadcast deal.
Yep.
They've got a new logo that looks like it's been designed this century.
Yes.
They've got a Channel 9 free-to-air deal for one game to be shown every week.
They are.
So you can actually be in danger of seeing an NBL game.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, you know, this is why netball has sort of gone through the roof in the last couple of years. It's like netball has always been a massive sport.
It's a sleeper. It's a sleeper sport.
It's a sleeper sport at junior level, but only now because they get on telly that netball has taken the next step. And basketball, again, is the giant sleeper sport of children's sport. Kids are just nuts about it and always have been. But they might actually be doing something right, the NBL, and good luck to them.
Yeah, the Brisbane Bullets are coming back next season.
That could be the mistake that we're looking for. Melbourne United, remember, when they dumped the Tigers and became Melbourne United, there was a massive outcry, this will never work. They're working very hard, Melbourne United, and they're doing pretty well, I got to say.
Well, the guy that owns the Melbourne United, he's bought the NBL.
Yeah, Larry Kesselman.
Yeah, he bought the whole thing.
Yeah.
I like that. I liked it so much I bought the competition.
I bought the company.
I think he picked it up for $7.
Yeah, it wasn't one of his bigger purchases. I think his car was more expensive.
In negotiations, at the end, he said, I think I got an ashtray in my car. I might just pick up the NBL. Duck out and get that for you.
And that's been this week's episode of Titus and Paradise, the podcast. Feel free to jump on iTunes, subscribe, hunt us down any which way you like, and send us a few things on Twitter. Titus, we'll see you next week.
I'll see you then.